is the UR Business Network.
This is Irving Stackpole with the Medical Travel Show. It is my pleasure to have as a guest today David Vequist, professor at the University of the Incarnate Word in San Antonio, Texas, and founder of the Center for Medical Tourism Research, as our guest. It's a pleasure to have you with us, David.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, I know that our audience will want to know how you became interested in international healthcare and, in particular, medical travel.
Absolutely. It actually came from my previous background as a consultant during the 90s with Ernst & Young. Was involved in some technology implementations, primarily with Fortune 500 companies. And at that time, got to see the power and the capabilities of outsourcing, particularly to international destinations. And then later, the next job that I had was actually working in human resources with the large healthcare system that was associated with HCA, which is also the largest hospital system in the world. And the system I worked at, the facilities I worked with in San Antonio, Texas, also received a fair amount of international visitors from Mexico. So we were very aware of medical tourism. In my professional career. And so when I came over to academia, I had an opportunity to do some research on it. And my budding research, my initial thoughts and ideas about what the industry was and what it could become, kept getting me more excited, because the more I dug into it, the more I found there was interesting stories.
Well, what did you uncover in that original research, and are those circumstances still as compelling today?
That's a very good question. What I found was that the more you look into this, the more it is truly globalization and consumerism impacting on healthcare in a way that perhaps has never been felt before in the history of man. And so I think that is going to continue for the long term. And I think it's going to ultimately impact healthcare in countries all around the world in ways that they hadn't expected it to. And so that's one of the nice parts about doing this research, is that it's not just a subtopic within healthcare, but I see it impacting healthcare broadly in many ways going forward. In terms of where I think this is going to be going is, I think that many of the things that you're seeing in countries around the world, whether it's the regulations that were put in place in the United States with the ACA, or the economic impact that some countries around the world are seeing, or the increasing capabilities that hospitals are developing around the world. I think all of this is a positive trend for more medical travel and more consumerism in healthcare.
Certainly is an interesting picture that you start to paint. You talked about unexpected impacts. What are some of those impacts that you didn't expect? And can you look into the crystal ball and share with the audience what some further impacts you think will occur?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just here in the United States, in terms of the ACA, or also called Obamacare by some people, what we're seeing is the regulations that were put in place to increase access of healthcare and potentially also lead to some cost reductions may have the unintended consequence of leading to potentially greater levels of medical travel among certain segments within the U.S. population. And we see aspects of this in other countries around the world, and even in specific case studies.
For example,
yeah. This is another set of regulations, not necessarily related to ACA, but here in Texas, we just passed a law recently that restricts the facilities that can do abortions in the in Texas. And what they did is they increased the requirements of the facilities so that they have to be similar to an ambulatory care center. So it can't be an outpatient in a clinic that is not of an ambulatory level. And so there's been a recent article that ran here in Texas that was very fascinating, talking about a facility here in Texas that was actually going to be referring or perhaps suggesting to certain women in Texas that wanted to have abortions that they might want to go across the border into Mexico to receive those abortions. So this arbitrage, whether it's legal arbitrage, which means, again, going beyond borders or going distances to find a regulatory or legal environment that is more conducive to getting the health care you need, or using arbitrage for financial purposes. In other words, trying to find health care that meets your financial requirements. This is becoming more common, and a lot of this is due to technology, particularly the information that's available on the internet. So all this is a real fascinating mix. And again, it's these unintended consequences that are shaping healthcare in ways that we could have never predicted.
Are these consequences, I'm sure, some of them are positive and some of them are not so positive. Can you give us an example of one of each?
Absolutely. I think, again, that's the great aspect of medical tourism, is that there are so many wonderful stories that are, and I find them very fascinating, that could potentially be considered positive or negative, moral or ethical stories, interesting stories that touch upon events that many people aren't aware of. There's, for example, there was another piece that was done on deaf tourism to Switzerland here not too long ago. There was a case a few years back of a British couple that made appointments to go to Switzerland for deaf tourism. And for our listeners, that's doctor-assisted suicide, which is legal in Switzerland for international visitors to go to a couple of the clinics there. Because the wife was booking the travel and booking the appointments and the hotel and all, made all the arrangements for the husband, who was, as I recall, was suffering from some, I think it was cancer or some type of illness that he was not going to recover from and wanted to end his life peacefully. Because she booked all that travel from within the country of England, they then went to Switzerland, had the procedure performed, and then she came back alone, obviously widow, back to England. She was initially, when she touched down in England, she was charged with what would be called in the United States, for example, manslaughter, second degree murder, because she had booked the situation that he would be then killed when he reached Switzerland, and that's not legal in Great Britain. As I recall, the charge was dropped simply because they found it would be extraordinarily difficult to try her in a jury setting, or even with judges, and probably get a guilty verdict. But so you see examples like this where people are choosing arbitrage, in this case legal arbitrage, trying to find a regulatory environment that makes sense for their healthcare needs. And you could see aspects of this that could be both positive and negative. We also saw very controversial events, for example, a ship that was parked out in international waters outside of Ireland that was intending to give women in Ireland access to abortions. Ireland, as a country, is very restrictive on abortions. And so the people would shuttle people from Irish sovereign country ports to international waters, where they then could, in an operating theater that was set up in a boat in international waters, could get abortions. We've seen unethical issues, arguably, for example, like there was a California-based medical tourism facilitator that was offering a two-for-one surrogacy program in India for women that wanted, in the United States, that wanted to go to India to have surrogacy tourism. they could actually have two women in India bear their children for the price of one. That way, if there was issues, if there was birth defects, if there was some medical issue, gosh, only knows, perhaps maybe if one child was a boy and one child was a girl, they could choose. I don't know what the expected outcomes of the two for one would be, but it just serves to show as a model of the possible ethical, legal, moral issues that come up within medical tourism.
There's certainly quite a few ethical issues that emerge when you open up the realm of health and wellness services to the world's consumers and give them access. These are fascinating stories, David, that I know will warrant further conversation between and among our audience and even among our guests. When you talk about technology, I assume that what you mean is fundamentally the internet, that individuals are accessing information about these providers, about these resources via the internet. Is that fundamentally correct?
Yes, that's correct. And the interesting fact that came up a few years back is within the United States, the Pew Research Organization found out that searching for healthcare, which is ubiquitous to all humans, basically, all humans at some point in time are going to have a healthcare issue themselves or with one of their family members or a friend. And so searching for healthcare on the internet is considered perhaps the third most common thing that people do on the internet outside of email and utilizing social media, at least in the United States. And so what we find is because of the intense searching that goes on by consumers, that much more health information is available on the internet, and that allows for more patient consumerism. And just to quickly touch on, I mentioned some of the interesting ethical and moral issues, but the other thing that we can't leave out from this conversation is economically, there does seem to be an impact from medical tourism that happens both at a regional, perhaps even a state or a country level. And we've seen countries and organizations within those countries, facilities, providers, benefit from medical travel from an economic standpoint, because we've seen patient flows that are now going to places, presumably because they offer good value, meaning quality and or price that is acceptable to consumers. Consumers are sharing their opinions about that value, and that's leading to more patient consumerism. So the economic impacts are substantial, and there's estimates out there, although very difficult to validate, that this industry is a multiple billion-dollar industry worldwide, and there's very little in my mind that it makes me doubt that it is a significant industry, a large multi-billion dollar industry worldwide.
Well, that would explain why so many countries and so many providers within those countries are expressing an interest in establishing themselves as destinations to receive health, wellness, dental, and medical care. You mentioned the challenge of regulatory and legal differences between countries across borders. Do you see, as you scan the horizon, do you see any legitimate efforts underway to establish cross-border standardization, any efforts to harmonize the regulatory or legal standards between and among countries?
Yes, obviously the EU stands out in terms of the cross-border directive, which the EU has put a lot of time and effort into looking at the regulatory environment across borders and being able to open up cross-border travel with the hope that that will lead to higher quality and perhaps lower cost for everyone involved. The idea is ultimately that competition and transparency and freedom of consumerism will lead to positive outcomes in healthcare within the EU. Plus, quite frankly, the other reason they did that is because it was happening anyways, and so there was kind of a call from the citizenship overall within the EU for more travel. We also see, again, as you mentioned, the harmonization efforts. Harmonization efforts have been in place for some time now within the pharmaceutical and medical device industries. And so this has only helped to kind of pave the way for what we're seeing is greater amounts of medical tourism between countries. And arguably, you know, even prior to that, the efforts, particularly by developed countries within, say, the U.S. and Japan and Canada and Europe and some of the other countries that have arguably in the past been considered great places for healthcare innovation, healthcare services, they have actually spread their best practices as part of a goodwill campaign, sometimes as part of an economic development campaign, and also as part of a political call to spread those with other countries. And so what we've seen is the taking of the, say, a John Hopkins protocols, and those protocols are practiced in many hospitals around the world. So it's happened to some extent informally at first, and now more formally recently. I would like to see more done in this area. I'd like to see more countries like the country of Korea, which is putting in place standards to make it easier for medical tourists from international destinations to have more assurance that they will receive high quality care, and also the ability to seek a fix if they don't receive the quality that they need. The country of Korea is one of the leading standard bearers when it comes to these types of behaviors.
Yes, indeed. So this is a fascinating global look through the eyes of a professor who's been studying the subject for some time. In the final few minutes, what do you see as the future unfolding for international medical travel, David?
Well, as typical, what happens when technology and globalization impact an industry. And for those of us that lived in the United States and have been here for a while, remember back in, say, the 70s when Japanese automobiles were first coming into the United States. You can't, as the expression goes, can't put the genie back in the bottle. So I see oftentimes that colleagues of mine and people around the world discussing medical tourism as something that could be restrained, suppressed, or regulated out of existence. And I suspect that those efforts are, though in some cases they're well-intentioned because they're trying to avoid the bad aspects of consumerism, which the buyer beware stories that we're all going to hear. But quite frankly, I don't think this is possible. I think that medical tourism is a trend. It's a trend that has a long tail. It's going to have major impacts on healthcare. And again, it's not due to just a wacky small minority of people that are deciding to travel. It's due to consumerism. It's due to technology. It's something that's becoming a part of how we choose healthcare. And that doesn't mean necessarily we all travel to another country. It just means that we're spending more time getting on websites like Angie's List and reviewing our colleagues, our peers, our community, the world is saying about our healthcare providers, our facilities, and we're choosing to engage in healthcare that makes sense for us, that adds value to us in our lives. And again, value being both looking at the cost as well as quality combined.
Well, once again, David, you have broached far more thoughts and ideas in a short time than we can possibly cover. I have genuinely appreciated your comments and hope we can continue the conversation at another interview. How can our audience reach you if someone wanted to get in touch with you, David?
Absolutely. The easiest way is to go to our website, which is medicaltourismresearch.org, O-R-G. We're a academic-based research center, so please contact us and let us know if you have any possible collaborations or questions about the industry. And also, my email is Vequist, my last name, V-E-Q-U-I-S-T, @UIWTX.edu. And please feel free to contact me. I'm always interested in hearing from people that are interested in this industry. It's fascinating, fast-growing, and it's ever-changing.
Once again, thank you so much, David. Our guest today has been Dr. David Vequist, Professor of International Business at the University of the Incarnate Word in San Antonio, Texas, and the founder of the Center for Medical Tourism Research. And I am Irving Stackpole, and thank you for listening to the Medical Travel Show.
The UR Business Network. We mean business.